Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita.
I'm Ron.
And I'm Jean Marie.
Collectively, we're the hosts of Podcast DX. On today's show, we are going to discuss an often misunderstood chronic disease, narcolepsy.
That's correct, Lita. And our guest, Lindsay Kaiser, is joining us today from North Carolina to talk about narcolepsy. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi, Lindsay.
Hi.
Nice to talk to you.
Yes, and you know what? We love North Carolina. We spent 6 months there about...
5 years ago?
3 years
no,
ago.
No, 3 years ago.
3 years ago. Yeah. And we still want to go back.
Yeah, what part of North Carolina are you from?
I'm from right outside of Charlotte, so a little bit more of the southern part.
Okay.
We're just about 15 minutes from South Carolina.
Oh, okay.
We were in the Raleigh-Durham area.
Correct.
And but yeah, we really like it. And the fact that you all have flowers blooming already.
Oh,
we're very
love it.
Jealous.
Love it.
Yes. You actually get
we
a
do.
Spring.
I yeah. love it.
Well, Lindsay, can you start us off by telling us exactly... Or what exactly is narcolepsy?
Yeah, so narcolepsy is a chronic neurological disease that affects the body's ability to regulate the sleep and wake cycle. It's characterized by excessive daytime sleepiness, cataplexy, or a sudden loss of muscle tone that's often triggered by emotions, extremely vivid dreams, sleep paralysis, and hallucinations upon falling asleep or waking up, and disrupted nighttime sleep.
And how common is the problem?
So it's estimated that narcolepsy affects about 1 in 2,000 people. However, because there is such a long time to diagnosis, about 75% of the people they believe that have narcolepsy are still undiagnosed.
Wow. Oh, that's a big number.
Yeah, that's huge.
Wow. Lindsay, can you tell our listeners about the symptoms that you were mentioning? Some of those words don't ring with me.
Are used in common day.
Right, like yes. Cataplexy. Yeah, could you tell us about those?
Yeah, so cataplexy is a sudden but temporary loss of muscle tone, often triggered by emotions. For me, it involves more my legs. For some people, it's, you know, their whole body. Some of them, it's their face, their hands. It varies from person to person. But during cataplexy, the person remains completely aware and awake. They're just unable to respond or, you know, control those certain muscles.
Okay.
And even though they're brief, they can be very terrifying. But I am lucky in the fact that I've only had one occurrence where it's been my full body. It's usually... mostly my legs.
Okay.
That I have the issue with.
Right.
And then one of the other things, you do sometimes see automatic behavior where you're carrying out different actions and doing things. And it's not that you're asleep, sleepwalking or anything like that. You just are so zoned out going through a lot of times the routine activities. I know for me, sometimes it's, you know, getting up, getting stuff together or, you know, cleaning up at night and putting things in very odd places. And, you know, usually the first sign of narcolepsy is excessive daytime sleepiness.
Okay.
And you do feel very drowsy and sluggish during the day. It, for someone that does not have narcolepsy, it's very comparable to taking some kind of sleeping medication and then attempting to remain awake for 40 to 72 hours.
Oh, that's painful. So that explains a lot.
Yeah, yeah. As someone who takes sleeping medication...
And then tries to stay awake.
Can't do it. Yeah.
I can picture that. That was a very good visual. Thank you. For people listening on the radio, that's an important thing to spell out. Thank you.
Yeah, it's beyond your regular just, you know, didn't get a good night's sleep. It's something that's very hard to imagine if you don't have narcolepsy.
Sure.
And then sleep paralysis can occur either as you're falling asleep or waking up, but in that point, you're unable to move. You're awake, you're able to hear, you know, see what's going on around you. You just cannot move your body. It can last anywhere from a few seconds to a few minutes. And it can also be accompanied by hallucination.
Okay. That sounds absolutely terrifying.
Yes. Especially if you're unable to move.
Oh yeah. So, you know, for me, if I have sleep paralysis, I'm usually having some sort of hallucination. Mm-hmm. So you're unable to move and something, you know, crazy that's not there is going on usually.
Mm-hmm.
And during these hallucinations, they often involve all these different senses. You know, it's not just seeing something. You know, I've smelled things, I've heard things. You know, there's even been a few times like I felt like someone was touching me, but nobody was actually there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes they're very trivial. You know, I've had images of, you know, my husband waking up telling me just, you know, something off the wall, stupid, you know, making some kind of joke.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the hallucination. I've had other times, you know, where it's, you know, I'm convinced that someone's breaking into our house.
Oh.
You know, I'm hearing, you know, someone banging on the door, you know, walking around the room, things like that. So it varies. It can be anywhere in between there.
Wow. It's like a nightmare while you're awake.
Well, yeah.
Exactly. And then the last thing is disturbed nocturnal sleep. So with narcolepsy, you don't get the deep sleep that restores you. So your sleep is very fragmented.
Mm-hmm.
Often, you know, people with narcolepsy will wake up several times in the night, or we will get a very large amount of either light or REM sleep,
mm-hmm.
which is part of what causes a lot of the hallucination, sleep paralysis, things like that. And it doesn't get you to feel rested when you wake up.
Okay.
So regardless of that amount of sleep, you know, that you actually get, it's not restoring your body.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's times I've slept very short amounts and felt the same as if I were to sleep a very long amount.
Okay.
Wow. Liz, I have a question. When you see narcolepsy portrayed on TV, for example, they have it where somebody just falls asleep like in a split second while they're doing daily activities. Is that any truth with that, or is that pretty much a fallacy where they can fall asleep at any time?
No one that I have met has had that. I can't figure out if they're trying to depict the sleepiness or if that's supposed to be cataplexy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really get where that came from. But, I mean, you see, you know, people falling asleep at the dinner table, mid-conversation. I've never had that happen. I know with cataplexy, you know, if there is something funny, you know, in the middle of the conversation, you know, if it is someone that does have a more, you know, severe reaction to some of that, you know, they can fall over and look like they're asleep, but they're still completely aware of everything. And I don't know if that a misguided representation of that. I haven't really understood where that came from, but mm-hmm. that is not how it looks at all.
Okay.
I wonder if it's just more for TV purposes, but I'm glad you brought that up. What symptoms actually led you to seek out a diagnosis? What did you have?
So I had actually tried to get diagnosed or figure out what caused my sleepiness at several different points throughout my life. Even as a kid, I was very, very sleepy. I was never the one that would wake up at 7 o'clock in the morning to watch cartoons. But what happened that really made me push for this last time, I had switched to a job where I was an outside sales rep. And after a conference that we went to, both driving there and driving back, I had a very hard time staying awake. I was stopping on the way back. I think there was a point I was stopping every 15 minutes to, you know, get soda, you know, walk around my car, do jumping jacks, anything that I could to stay awake. And that, you know, that is not the norm. Most people do not have to stop, you know, journey 4 to 6 hour drive every 15 minutes.
Right.
You know, I was calling everyone on the phone, you know, just anything that I could to stay awake. And it just was like, it hit me like, this is not right.
Sure.
And, you know, through the different points that I had tried to get diagnosed, I'd heard everything from I was getting older, that I wasn't sleeping enough, that I was sleeping too much, that I just had a longer sleep cycle, that it was depression, everything under the sun. I think I have been checked, had my thyroid checked probably more than most normal people that do not have a thyroid issue, because that always seemed to be the first thing they jumped to.
Okay. And you said that you had this very early on and you noticed it when you were quite young. Is that typically the case that, you know, are people who are later diagnosed with narcolepsy, is it something that they typically start having at a very young age?
It varies. There are some with childhood. It's more common once you get into, you know, the middle, high school, even some of the early college age.
Okay.
It's not something that you're born with.
Okay.
It does have to develop.
Okay.
Are there any known causes for narcolepsy?
So they have found a genetic link in a specific gene, but a large portion of the population does have that. So there still is an environmental cause. I know for me, my symptoms started right after I had a long battle with, you know, going back and forth with strep throat as well as mono.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of the ones that I know that have it, there was some kind of sickness involved. I've also heard, you know, some can have some kind of, you know, traumatic brain injury, you know, different things. And there are some people that honestly are not sure where it came from. They're still doing a lot of research and there's not a ton that they know and understand. But from what the current research is showing, that a lot of where the condition comes from.
Okay. The only thing that I can relate to regarding this condition is back when I was active duty, we were actually marching, and I guess we had been up like for a day and a half prior to this march. They have a lot of force training to try to get you used to working in bad conditions. So we were up for, let's say, a day and a half straight, and then we were marching, and I fell asleep while marching. And I don't know how the heck I did it, but the people next to me would be bumping me like, you know, you're sleeping. And I can kind of understand how that would be frightening, because you think that you feel like you're in a different body, right?
Oh, yeah. It's terrifying. But, I mean, you know, going through that, you go through that level of sleep deprivation, you know, which is, you know, essentially what narcolepsy is doing to your body. It's depriving you of sleep.
So people with narcolepsy don't sleep more?
No. There are parts where, you know, I will sleep not consistently for a long time. You know, I may wake up several points during that. But, you know, if I've had a rough night of sleep, I may be in bed for a longer time, but it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm getting that sleep.
Right.
And
sure.
Even if you are sleeping more, you're not getting the restful sleep that you need.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Jean just bought me a, I don't know if you've heard of them. Jean just bought me bracelet.
It's a smartwatch that monitors your sleep and your pulse ox and your movement while you're sleeping.
And it tells me the next day if I got how many hours of REM, how many hours of light sleep, how many hours of deep sleep. I think it's a cool tool. I think that everybody with narcolepsy should get one of these.
Right, or if you're having sleep. Well, as you were saying, Lindsay, it sounds like it's very, very hard to diagnose. How is it eventually diagnosed?
So the first step to that is usually your overnight sleep study.
Okay.
During this, you're hooked up to a ton of wires, and honestly, you kind of look like an alien because it's probably 20 so wires that are attached to your head. Mm-hmm. There's wires attached to some of your different limbs, and they also are during this have a little piece in your nose that's checking for sleep apnea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
During this, they're trying to rule out any sort of other condition that may be causing this sleepiness. So the first step is making sure that there's not something else that's causing this sleepiness.
Okay.
The following morning, they wake you up and you begin a multiple sleep latency test. And what that is, you are up for about 2 hours and then you go down for a nap. You have a certain amount of time that you're able to fall asleep for the nap. If you fall asleep, then they let you sleep, I believe it's for about 20 to 25 minutes. And if you go into REM during two of those, and they do anywhere from 4 to 5 of those, then that's considered narcolepsy. Because the average person would not go into REM in that short amount of time.
Oh, okay.
There's also some with certain types of narcolepsy, type 1, that has the cataplexy. If there's not the clear-cut diagnosis, they will sometimes do a spinal tap. They can also do the blood test for genetics to see if you have that gene to help support that when there's not the clear-cut diagnosis. But it can be a combination of things like that. For me, it was really easy. I did 4 naps. I fell asleep during all of them, and 2 of them I went into REM, and I went into REM very quickly when I went in.
Okay.
So it was pretty clear cut. We didn't have to do the spinal tap or even the genetic testing. The doctor felt confident that that's what it was.
Okay.
Following those tests.
Okay. Well, I guess that answers your question, huh, Ron?
It was. It actually did. So I'm going to ask Lita's question. Are there any treatments for narcolepsy?
There are. It's a mixture of both kind of lifestyle changes as well as medication. There's not a ton of medication out there. For me, I do most days take at least a nap anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes. Sometimes if it's been either really exhausting day or I didn't get much sleep the night before, I may do even more than one. Sticking to very strict both sleep and wake time, maintaining that schedule does really help. Not necessarily just with narcolepsy, but sleep in general. And then making sure that I'm relaxing before bed, taking warm bath. For me, even sometimes drinking, I'm not a big fan of hot tea, but something warm, whether it's hot chocolate, whatever, just something that has that warmth, or even using a heating blanket a little bit before bed. Right. Keeping the bedroom a very comfortable temperature, quiet, and just free from distractions.
Sure.
If I see or hear something, that's going to keep me up.
Okay.
And I actually do also use a sleep mask. I have had a lot better sleep just adding that in, even since I'm not able to see all the distractions, if there are any.
Okay.
Avoiding caffeine before bed, whether it's, tea, soft drinks. I don't drink coffee, but, that can also be one.
Mm-hmm.
Also avoiding alcohol or smoking before going to bed, and when exercising, just making sure that I'm doing that enough ahead of time so that that's not going to keep me up.
Right.
And trying to eat dinner enough ahead of time so that I'm not eating any sort of large meals and having that full stomach as I'm going to bed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very particular with how I schedule my day, so I know what times throughout the day that I'm most awake. And that's when I do schedule things that are going to need more energy or need me to be more awake, and then some of the things that, I can get away with when I am a little bit more tired, I do at the times that I don't have as much energy.
Okay.
Right.
Sure.
One of the biggest things for me too is stress. Stress not only keeps me up and makes me not have as good a sleep, it can cause my cataplexy to be worse and just to have a lot more of that sleepiness overall. And you know, just having that support system to help you get through a lot of that.
That's good. Right. I bet the stress of this coronavirus is certainly playing on everybody's mind. I know that keeps me up at night.
It is. You know, even though we're lucky, you know, we haven't had anyone directly affected yet, you know, still having that thought of it and, you know, knowing how many people this has already affected and will continue to affect as well.
Right, right. It's a stressor. I had a question. I know that you said that it took you quite a while to get a diagnosis, that you had problems when you were young, and you had been treated or tested, I guess, for thyroid conditions and things like that. Did they ever think that it was narcolepsy at the beginning and they just kept pushing it aside, or what was the problem with your diagnosis?
No, they had never really even, you know, gone to even a sleep condition. There were always other things. And honestly, even more than them, you know, trying to go for thyroid, depression, stuff like that. A lot of it was just attributed to me being a child or a teenager. And that, you know, I was staying up or just, you know, being that lazy, typical, stereotypical teenager.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, that's terrible to be undiagnosed and put aside and not taken seriously.
Right, and you're given that label. Lindsay, are there any medications that you can take or that are typically used to treat narcolepsy?
There are, and there's also, you know, over the past year and even some of the ones that are being going through trials right now, there's a lot more that are going to be coming on the market.
Okay.
I currently take a medication called Lapix, which has not been out long at all. I've also, me personally, I don't respond well to a lot of medications. I did have to go through several to find the one that worked for me. Most of them are more of either a stimulant or wake-promoting type of medication. The only one right now that is approved by insurance for nighttime sleep is called Xyrem, which I did try. Just for me, I did not have a positive response to it.
Okay.
But they are still very limited with what they do have out there. But hopefully over the next few years, we'll see some improvements with that.
Let's hope so. Yeah, that would be very helpful. Lindsay, how has narcolepsy affected your work or your personal life or, well, your social life?
I mean, it truly affects everything. You know, anyone that is close to me, whether it's, you know, supervisors at work, my family, friends, and even my husband, you know, they know that I can't always control when I'm able to do things. You know, there's times that I've been at work and I have to go take a nap or been out with friends or even had something planned with friends and we're not able to go because of the sleepiness. You know, my friends know that if we're out in public and I laugh really hard, there may be a chance that I may stumble or fall down. And a lot of times when you're out in public and people see that, you know, they jump to drugs or alcohol.
Right.
And that's not the case. It's something beyond that. So just, you know, them understanding and knowing that that's going to happen. But I have had a lot of friends that are very supportive of it, as well as family members and my husband that do, you know, are very accommodating. You know, if we're supposed to meet for dinner at 7 o'clock and I'm still sleeping and waking up, you know, we'll adjust and we get through. And thankfully for work, they've been very understanding. And my job does have a lot of flexibility. You know, if I need to go clock out, take a nap, I'm able to do that and then return to work.
Oh, that's good. Great. That's very nice. That's very nice.
Yes. And even when we were in the office, there is a space that they have called a health room where it's got a big chair with like an ottoman. And I'm able to go in there and actually take a nap there. I'm short enough that chair with the ottoman is, you know, even bigger than I am. So it's basically like me laying in a bed.
Right. Very nice.
That's nice that they're supportive in working with you with your job.
Yeah, I mean, and I think more and more businesses, you know, when they do have that health room that can be utilized by so many people, that's wonderful. Lindsay, what additional advice do you have for our listeners or for someone who's been recently diagnosed with narcolepsy?
Well, first off, you know, the ones that are struggling, like, continue to push. Because it wasn't the easiest thing to get diagnosed. And, you know, whether it's narcolepsy or something else, just trust your gut. You know, a lot of times when you feel like something wrong, it truly is. And after diagnosis, just being patient. You know, I didn't respond well to medication, and it did stress me out, you know. But it took that process and trying things and learning what didn't work for me to be able to find what worked.
Okay.
But it does get better. Just there's not one treatment that's going to work for everyone with any specific medication or medical diagnosis.
Sure.
You know, and just be willing to try the different things. There was a point I was willing to try anything under the sun just to see what worked. And there were some things that didn't, some that did, but the things that did is what's gotten me to where I am today.
Okay. And do you find help on in social media, like groups on Facebook and things? Do you find that those are helpful?
Yes. Facebook has a lot of groups. Also, there are a lot on Instagram that I've connected with, you know, that are very supportive, that understand, you know, what I'm going through. And there's also even more so now with, you know, a lot of these stay-at-home orders, you know, from the COVID-19, there's a lot of these support groups that are going to Zoom calls and things like that.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Even prior to that, there were a few, but there's a lot more. And those are very helpful for me because where I live, there is not a active support group.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, where I get a lot of my support and I'm able to share what's going on and the things that are happening without having to explain it. You know, I can say, you know, I had an awful hallucination and they understand it and they get it.
Right, right. It's good to have validation of your own symptoms by talking to others that have that problem. And that's basically why we have our show, to let everybody know that they're not alone.
Right.
No.
Well, thank you very much. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, even with narcolepsy being, you know, rare or any other rare disease, you know, there are still other people out there that are going through that same struggle, and it, you know, just finding them and connecting with them does help a lot.
Right.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Lindsay. I'm sure that our listeners have learned a lot from you sharing your story.
Well, yeah.
Thank you.
We appreciate you taking time out of your day to educate us as well as our listeners.
And I should have apologized earlier, but we do have a dog that's sleeping underneath our recording equipment right now.
In case you hear snoring, it's not us.
In case you hear snoring, yeah. She is sound asleep and loving the fact that she gets to stay home.
She likes to listen to us talk, so she just lays there and sleeps and listens to us talk.
Yeah, she used to listen to me read stories to the kids at bedtime, and she just thinks this is story time and has now fallen asleep, so I apologize for her. But thank you ever so much, Lindsay. Send us some of that beautiful weather if you get a chance.
I will try to send some your way.
Thank you.
Hopefully it stays down here too.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, we don't want to send any of the chill or the flurries that they got.
Yeah, you know, a friend of mine in Minnesota got 3 inches of snow yesterday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Tell him to keep it there.
Yes, I did. I did tell him that. Well, if our listeners have any questions or comments related to today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com, through our website, podcastdx.com, on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, or Instagram.
And if you have a moment to spare, please give us a review wherever you get your podcast. As always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime, and never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this podcast.
Until next week.